From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh. LARPing even as we speak. It is The Dice Men on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, another Wednesday night in Hobart. I'm LARPing right now.
You are dressed as a hipster, early 40s board gamer.
You can call me Prince Flugelhorn. Or son. Actually, you know, there are advantages to treating parts of my life as a LARP. Like my workplace.
Yes.
Right now. I find it really very helpful for my mental health.
It helps you get into character when
really,
you get there.
It really does.
That's not a bad strategy, actually.
We're talking tabletop gaming et al. My name's Trent.
And I'm Mark.
And on the Dice Men tonight, we have...
We've got a huge interview with Melissa Rogerson. She is the tabletop manager for PAX 2014. We're so excited. We're going to PAX this weekend.
Have we mentioned that we're presenting
at
PAX?
We're going to be at PAX! Anyway, we're talking to Melissa. Got a great interview with her. She sheds a lot of light on PAX, a lot of light about Board Games Australia and everything she's involved in. I'm also going to do a bit of a Kickstarter roundup. I've got a confession to make.
No, you haven't even told me what this is about. I'm fascinated.
I'm going to do it live to air.
Morbidly fascinated.
All that and a truckload more on The Dice Men Cometh tonight.
I can't wait to find out what this is. Kicking things off in fine style tonight with some Pearl Jam, Brain of Jade. Turn it up. Because for some people, the 90s... just refuse to die. That's from Pearl Jam's Yield album. A lot of people stop listening to Pearl Jam, and some might say with good reason, but I, for one, have stuck through them through thick and thin, and I've got every album. I love them all.
Fantastic.
Okay, so that kicks us off tonight.
I don't mind a bit of Pearl Jam.
On Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. This is The Dice Men Cometh, and we're talking board games and card games and tabletop games and just stuff.
Mm.
And normally in this part of the show, we talk about what we've been playing lately, but Mark,
Trent,
I want to know what this I refuse to do anything else on
okay.
on the show. I'm not going to play the interview with Melissa or anything until you tell us what this confession is, because I'm actually concerned for
okay.
you. I'm worried.
So I have a confession to make. My name is Mark, and I'm a gameaholic.
Hi, Mark.
It's been 2.5 weeks since I played a board game.
What?
And I'm having absolutely severe withdrawals.
Well, it's just as well that you're binging at PAX this weekend.
I can't wait. And because I sat down thinking about, what am I going to talk about and what we've been playing? Because last week I talked about Yukata.day, the online website.
Sure.
So I have been playing a bit more Yukata this week. But just with work and family and working on weekends and stuff like that. And, you know, Wednesday night game nights have been getting cancelled and I've been busy. All of a sudden I realised... I had not played a game for 2.5 weeks.
And it's only...
It's getting me down.
And it's getting into the busy part of the year.
I know.
Like we're not even in December yet.
I know. It's getting me down. It's crazy. However, look, the only redeeming thing, I guess, and I guess it's happened at this time, luckily, I've discovered Skyrim.
Oh, no.
I've come late to the party because, you know, everyone else was playing Skyrim probably 2 years ago. And I remember...
You better be playing Skyrim at 2 a.m, because if you're playing Skyrim, you've got time to board game and get some mates around.
Why do you think my eyes look like they do? And it's funny because I remember when Skyrim was out, I remember listening to a Dice Tower podcast. And Tom Vassell mentioned, I haven't been gaming much lately. I've been sinking hours and hours and hours into Skyrim. And I sort of thought, wow, like, because he never really struck me as a video gamer.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to be attracted to it and sort of and sink hours, I mean, he might have even mentioned like 100 hours or something, to sink that sort of time into something like that, it must be really good. And it did stick in my mind that I want to try that someday. And then someone happened to mention to me that they had a good graphics card going for cheap that was going to allow my computer to run it, and I picked it up for only like about $25 or something like that.
You are well and truly down the rabbit hole,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, I know. And it, I guess it's been making up in a way for the fact that I haven't been able to play board games. And it is, I have to admit, it's very isolating. Sitting in a room, staring at a screen. It just reminded me, particularly when I thought about it today, the great thing about board games is the social nature of it.
I think the word you're looking for is not isolating, it's immersive. Isn't that how they sell it?
Yes, you're right. You're right, it is. And, you know, look, don't get me wrong, I've been really enjoying it, and I am hooked, absolutely.
Everything's done for you.
Yeah. And well, look, what I like is there's not a path that you're sort of shoved down. There's a lot of scope because it's like a free-form world.
Sure.
Although, you know, there are story progressions and it's clear what they're going to be. Like today, because I had a day off today. Today, for a little while, I helped the Empire win the Civil War in Skyrim. I was actually offered the opportunity to execute the king.
That's pretty cool.
And my line was, I've done enough killing today.
I can't begrudge you a little dalliance on the dark side.
Look, and it has been my relaxation because I haven't had the opportunity to play games. So I just wanted to get that out there because I'm really suffering. And luckily, I'm going to have a 48-hour binge game-a-thon at PAX. I can't wait.
Well, listen, I just want to say how touched I am that you felt comfortable to confess that you've been playing Skyrim to me.
Yes.
I feel special, and it makes me feel much better about the confession that I'm about to make. Uh-oh. About what it is that I've been playing lately. Munchkin Adventure
no!
Time. To explain, well, actually, let me just step back and shall we explain to the uninitiated what Munchkin actually is? Because this is going out live on the radio, so it is possible that someone might not know what Munchkin actually is.
There's someone in the world that has never heard of Munchkin.
Yeah.
I'm finding that hard to believe.
So it's a series of card games from Steve Jackson Games, a company that I've loved for a long time, despite their many, 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 many flaws.
Yes.
And I guess originally it was a sort of... Look, it was... taking the urine out of D&D originally. It was distilling the D&D dungeon crawling experience down to two decks of cards and beating up some monsters and getting some treasure.
Mm.
And it was like, it took 5 minutes to explain. And it's a decent enough little filler.
Yeah, and look, it's got all the in-jokes. I remember the first three or four times I played it, you know, I laughed at all those, the Duck of Doom and the +3 boots of butt kicking and all that sort of thing. You know, it was hilarious for the first three or four games. Then it got old.
Turned into a huge hit, you mean?
Yeah, I know.
And a massive money spinner for Steve Jackson Games. There are now 50 million versions of Munchkin. And Munchkin Adventure Time is just one of the latest ones. Oh. And it's themed around the cartoon show. Yeah. I have, of course, bought this for my daughter.
Yes, of course. Pearl loves Adventure Time, doesn't she?
She does. She calls this the greatest game ever.
No! I have such hopes for her!
So what's different about this version of Munchkin to anything else? Look, not much, really, rules-wise. You choose a character. That's a nice thing, actually, because the characters... some of the episodes of Adventure Time, for no reason, flip over to alternate versions of the characters that are different sexes.
Okay, yes.
So you know, all the men turn into women for one episode, and that's a thing in Munchkin where your sex can change halfway through. So that's a nice thing. You're still knocking on the door, flipping over the cards, fighting the monsters, and looting the dungeon. You've got four different classes: wizard, royalty, hero, and
dog,
musician.
Oh,
and the musician special ability is cool because if you discard a card and make up a rhyme on the spot, and it's called keeping the beat, which is a nice little nice little show reference.
Yeah.
And then you get a bonus for that. And all the show's characters are in there: Ricardio, the Lich, the Banana Guard, James Baxter, Tree Trunks, and even the most villainous penguin in the universe, Gunter, is in there. Look, if you're a fan of the show and you know someone who might be interested in just killing a half an hour with a casual game, that's the level that my daughter's at, then it's perfect. But it's another installation of Munchkin, and it's really no different.
Well, look, speaking of Munchkin, do you know what I saw today in one of our friendly local game stores?
No, I don't know. Munchkin Zombie Apocalypse.
No, no. A game called Loot Letter.
Right.
Can you imagine Loot Letter?
Is that based on the Love Letter?
Exactly. It's basically the Love Letter game in the Munchkin universe. So instead of in Love Letter, you've got like royalty, you've got kings and princes and countesses and guards and all that stuff. In this, you've got from 1 to 8, the cards are different bits of treasure. So you're swapping bits of treasure, trying to have the best bit of treasure. It's basically exactly the same as Love Letter.
Is it the same company?
Steve Jackson Games have released it.
Right.
So firstly, I can't believe... AEG, what were you thinking?
Yeah, because...
why would they give the license to Steve Jackson Games? Oh, I mean, I can totally see why. It's just, it could open them up to a massive audience of people who do role-playing in Munchkin... who aren't in the normal inverted commas board game world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Love Letter's just gone berserk anyway. I don't know. Do we really need another version of Love Letter?
What do we call it, Mark? We call it...
Jumping the Shark?
Milking the Lizard. Now, by my reckoning, it's been about 4 minutes since we mentioned that we're presenting at PAX.
Are we at PAX?
This Saturday in Melbourne, and you spoke to the PAX tabletop organiser, Melissa Rogerson.
Absolutely.
During the week. We're going to play you some of that interview next on The Dice Man Cometh. This is Edge Radio, in case you didn't know, on 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. That's Mac DeMarco, and what the hell was before that? Oh, I don't know, something else. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark, half-assed as ever. How you going?
You are a radio professional, no doubt about it.
Oh, man. Hey, we're going to be talking Kickstarter soon, some... projects that you can lay some money down on and get them delivered to your door in the not-too-distant future, we hope. But in the meantime... Mark caught up with Melissa Rogerson from PAX Australia, and look, here they are to tell us all about it.
So joining me on the Dice Men Cometh today, I have Melissa Rogerson, who is, first and foremost, she's in charge of the tabletop gaming at PAX this year, which is amazing, but also she is, I'd say, an integral part of the tabletop and board gaming scene in Australia. Melissa, how are you going?
I'm great. How are you?
Now, it's so great to have you on tonight, and particularly in the week leading up to PAX. It's all very exciting. Our listeners do love to know, what have you been getting to the table lately?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Splendor. It's my 16-year-old's favourite game, so she kind of trounces us every time we play. And, of course, Splendor's very much flavour of the month at the moment. My other daughter, who's 11, is loving Machikoro, and that's all she wants to play. So, again, they're both fully paid-up members of the Cult of the New.
Good to see you're spreading the board gaming love in your family, that's for sure. Got to keep those new board gamers coming along. Now, I was lucky enough to meet you at BorderCon, and one of the things I asked you about then, and I'm going to go over it again for our listeners today, is how you ended up doing, if I'm right, the English translations for the cards in Agricola, which to me just freaked me out that someone in Australia would be doing something like that on such an iconic game.
Well, of course, it wasn't an iconic game when I started working on it, but, you know, we had a sense that maybe it was going to be something special. It's one of those long series of coincidences. I was very keen, I suppose, on using my German. It had been a long time since I'd actually spoken German. I think my husband, Fraser, had always wondered why anybody would want to learn a foreign language. And then when we picked up board gaming, and of course all the great games were coming out of Germany, suddenly, you know, there was this moment of clarity that it was really awesome because he had a wife who could speak German and he had a wife who could tell him how to play all of these games. At the time, just before Agricola came out, Fraser and I were writing for a blog called Gone Gaming, which was one of the really early board gaming blogs. I wrote a sort of rather tongue-in-cheek post for that about how I was, you know, kind of getting the itch to translate something else. I'd done a few unofficial translations. Essen was coming up. This was Essen 2007. And I thought, look, maybe there's a game that somebody would like me to translate. A bunch of people came back and said, yes, Agricola. So I did a bit of digging around on Board Game Geek, and I found that the publisher of Agricola, Hanno Gierke from Lookout Games, had said he was hoping to have an English translation available at Essen that year if he got around to doing it. So I thought, look, I'm going to be really cheeky. And I sent him a geek mail saying, hi, you don't know me. I'm a gamer from Australia. These are a couple of unofficial translations I've done on the Geek. I've had some good feedback from them. I'm interested in translating Agricola. Any chance you'd send me a free copy if I let you, you know, use my translation? He came back with a, yeah, sure, go for it. You know, here are the rules. At which point I went, oh my goodness, because of course if you think about how long the rule book of Agricola is compared to pretty much any other game, it's absolutely massive. It was already September. And I said, look, it's all very well to translate the rules, but I really need to translate the cards as well. And he said, are you sure? There's an awful lot of them. I said, yeah, yeah, send them to me. So off I went and I did the cards as well. It ended up being a much bigger project than I ever thought. I spent a lot of time researching 16th century farming methods, and I spent a lot of time actually chatting with William Attia, who's the designer of Kalis, because he was doing a translation into French at the same time. So we'd have these long conversations about what is a potato dibber, or what is a sack cart, and how can we describe them. I think stone tongs were the hardest one for me. So it ended up being a lot of fun and a lovely way for me too to get to know William and to get to know Hanno.
And I've got to ask, did you get the free copy?
I did get the free copy, but it was one of those disastrous parcels that just doesn't arrive. And I think it took 5 weeks for it to get from Germany to Australia.
It seems like that everyone who sort of dips their toe into the board gaming world rather than just playing games, at the back of their mind, there's this thought, I might be able to get a free game or two out of this.
Well, and it's funny how much work we'll do too just to get a free game.
Exactly right. One of the things that you've been involved in, I think pretty much right from its inception almost, Board Games Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. Now, Board Games Australia is, I suppose, we're trying to be a peak body for games in Australia, but a reasonably authoritative group as well, so that we can speak about the quality of games. We want to actually really build the market for games in Australia. And when we look at how that's happened around the world, and particularly we look at what happened in Germany with the Spiel des Jahres, it was about having people who were objective, who spoke with some level of authority about the games, and who really ran a very high quality award system. You know, if you look at the market for the Spiel des Jahres these days, there's a lot of grandparents who just go into a shop and every year they buy whatever has that little purple on it. So as soon as it gets the award, that's the game they're going to buy for their grandchildren, because the award is known and trusted, and we want to have an award like that. So
it's almost the license to print money, isn't it?
Well, it is over there, yes. Not here yet, but, you know, give us another 10, 15 years. And
the awards now, you have been going for how many years, the Board Games Australia Awards?
I want to say 5, but I've got a suspicion it might be 6. But every year we award 3 awards. So we have the Best Australian Game. That's a game with significant creative content by an Australian. We have the Best Children's Game, and then we have the Best International Game, which is that sort of catch-all of let's pick a game that people are going to enjoy playing, again, with that slightly Spiel des Jahres flavour of we're not looking for the most complex game or the most clever and fiddly game. We're actually looking for something that we feel is approachable and accessible.
And a couple of members of our Hobart Game Society were actually involved in the in the voting this year, so that was really great for us down here to feel like we're part of the bigger picture.
Oh, look, we really want to get more people involved in the judging. One of our limitations, I suppose, is that typically we have 2 copies of the game submitted, and we need to kind of send them around and make sure all our judges get their hands on them. And obviously postage can add up a little bit, but that's our biggest hindrance, I suppose. Particularly within the Australian industry, you know, a lot of people are putting a lot of time and a lot of money into producing their own games, and then to ask them for half a dozen copies is really putting a strain on them that they don't really need.
Now, just before we get to PAX, obviously you mentioned Essen, and you've been to Essen, sounds like, a few times now, is that right?
Twice, yeah.
Have you been to any of the big gaming cons in America?
I haven't, no. My husband Fraser's been over to BGGCon.
Because I know I've been trying to get a sense of where, for example, Gen Con sits in relation to Essen now, where all the talk in my early years in Eurogaming was about Essen. Gen Con seems to have caught up maybe in size. Do you have a sense of that?
I know that if you're a Eurogamer primarily, then Essen is the place where you're looking at new games being released. But there are a lot of fantastic titles coming out of Gen Con. So, you know, I've been playing The Builders Middle Ages, which is a really little game in a tin from Asmodee, which is a bit like an evolution of Splendor. We'll have that at PAX if you want to come and try it. Also, Five Tribes from Days of Wonder. That was really a Gen Con release. And, you know, and that's a fantastic game.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Mark. We'll come back to that interview in just a moment here on The Dice Man Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's a song called Justice by Bremen Town out of Tassie. Bremen, a little town in Germany, as a matter of fact.
In fact, and we're talking about German games. And Melissa, who does speak German.
That's right.
About PAX.
And all sorts of things here on The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Mark's interview with Melissa continues now.
Now, let's get to PAX, the all-important PAX. It's all very exciting. A little bird tells me that you've had some issues actually getting the games for PAX.
Oh, my goodness. You can't see my hands, and please don't look at them if you come to PAX, but my fingernails are bitten right back. So we're waiting on some games that I'm having express freighted over from Germany, and the shipping number has vanished. So DHL tracks the game until they get on the plane in Germany, but then it won't track them because they hand the games over to Australia Post. So I know they made it onto the plane, but beyond that, all I can do is hope that they will arrive in the next couple of days. And it's quite possible that they might arrive on Friday and then show up at PAX on Saturday.
And is it true that you've been travelling the world selecting these games?
Oh, don't I wish. Look, I was very lucky because when I talked to PAX about running the board games or the tabletop area in general this year, I said, look, one of the things that's difficult for me is that the only PAX I've ever been to is PAX Australia. And they very kindly flew me over to Boston earlier this year for PAX East. That was a fantastic experience for me, but it also gave me a chance to talk with lots of the publishers who exhibit at PAX East, to reconnect with some of the people like Greater Than Games, who do Sentinels of the Multiverse, who were here last year, and talk to quite a range of publishers. And we've got a few of them coming over. So we've got some people from the miniatures side of things. We've got Reaper Minis coming over, Soda Pop and Mercs. We have the Cards Against Humanity people coming over. Greater Than Games are coming back. I'm going to forget someone and then I'll be mortified. Steve Jackson Games are coming over. Q Workshop from Poland are coming over. They sell dice, the most fantastic range of dice. I'm sure I've forgotten someone and all I can do is apologise to them.
Look, it sounds like it's going to be jam-packed. Now, I've got to ask the question, and how did we get PAX in Australia? It's been such an exclusive thing, because I know I was a Penny Arcade fanboy from years ago. I actually remember having a discussion with them very early about trying to get the Child's Play charity thing up and running in Australia. And at the time, they were just so focused on America. And so obviously they've got PAX Prime in Seattle, which is their hometown. And then they've got PAX East. How did we get to be the first country out of the US to have a PAX? Do you know?
Yeah, I think it was luck.
Wow.
I think One of the things is that we have Read Pop in Australia. They're the company, the event management company that does PAX. I think that we were very lucky in that the team at Penny Arcade were interested in branching out to Australia, and they felt that they had a really strong fan base in Australia. There's a lot of trust involved in bringing a show like PAX to Australia. Obviously, just the time was right and the people were right, and they're very committed to, you know, there's now four PAXes, because after PAX Australia last year, they also added PAX South, which is going to be held in San Antonio in, I think, January.
Last year, you were a key player. This year, you're actually running the whole tabletop area. That must be pretty exciting.
It's fantastic. You know, the tabletop area, we've expanded three times because there's been so much interest. We've now got 6,000 square metres for tabletop just within the convention or within the exhibition centre. Lots and lots of exhibitors, as I said, some international, some local. And we also have overflow space. And this is really something I'm very excited about. There's one overflow space listed on the PAX maps already, but there are a number of other bars and cafes around Melbourne who've said, we're happy to have people play tabletop games when they come in. So you can go down to one of those bars, take your game with you, sit there, play some cards, have a drink, have a meal, and enjoy that PAX atmosphere.
For a first-time PAXer, what can I expect?
Wow. I think wow actually is the right answer. You can expect wow. PAX is huge. I mean, PAX is absolutely massive. You know, this year we've got the whole of the Melbourne Exhibition Centre and virtually all of the Convention Centre as well. And there are people everywhere. And what's really special about PAX is that everybody loves games. And it doesn't matter, you know, that maybe that person over there likes video games and that person over there likes DS games and that person over there only ever plays on, you know, their Xbox or whatever. We all love games, and that means we've all got something in common. There are all those different groups of people coming together and coming together not just to do what they love, but to try out different parts of the hobby as well. And, you know, when I looked at the feedback from the tabletop area last year, the stuff that really excited me, that made me feel really proud, was the people who said, look, I came for the video games, but I stayed for the board games because I was just having so much fun, I never left.
That says a lot about our hobby as well, I think, the inclusiveness of it.
Absolutely. And PAX is a very, very inclusive event as well. In PAX terms, tabletop isn't just board games. So there's four parts to the tabletop area. We've got the card games. So we've got a big magic presence, but we have other card games represented as well. I think we've got Pokemon and My Little Pony tournaments every day. We have the role-playing games. So we've got the Pathfinder Society are really terrific. They send lots of people along, but also a lot of the other GMs from shows like Arcanicon come along and run games. So people who've never played a role-playing game before can sit down and start playing. And we have a really fantastic miniatures area, including a paint and take area where you can just go in, sit down and have a go at painting a miniature and then take it away with you. And there's no extra charge for that. That's supported. It's supported by a lot of the publishers, but this year it's sponsored by Reaper Minis, and they've supplied all the paints and lots of figures and things as well. And then we have obviously the board games, which is both events and tournaments, and also a large free play library.
I was going to ask you, because obviously we've met at BorderCon, the con scene in general in Australia seems to be really taking off. What are your thoughts on the board gaming con scene in Australia?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's really exciting, and I love being able to go somewhere and not just play games, but also meet friends and meet up with friends that maybe I see two or three times a year, but we get together and we can sit down, we can play a game all the time.
Just before we let you go, Melissa, how do you think we're travelling in Australia in the board games world? And do you think we're sort of overcoming the issue of being so far from everything and the big cost issue? Because, you know, obviously shipping plays a really big part in our hobby.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking that the global financial crisis was really good for board gaming in Australia because games were suddenly so much cheaper than they'd ever been, and everybody was bringing the games in and they were flying them in because, you know, air freight, we were paying in someone else's money, so it wasn't as good as our money. And now things have shifted a little bit. I've noticed the cost of games going up again, and I've noticed the time to actually get them changing. So what I'm finding is when you think of games like Machikoro or Patch History or a lot of them, the initial print runs seem to be smaller. It's harder to get your hands on an initial print run, and then you've got a very long wait before the next print run comes through. My gut feeling is that maybe that's making it a little bit harder to get the newest games over here to Australia. Obviously, we have some fantastic businesses who are going over to Essen to pick up games and bring them back. And, you know, I think that's really terrific. But I just have this feeling that things maybe aren't quite as good as they were a couple of years ago.
Look, Melissa, thank you so much for talking with us on The Dice Men Cometh tonight. It's been really great. And we are so excited about our panel at PAX. So I can't let you go without saying thanks so much for giving Trent and I the opportunity to be involved. Any parting thoughts for us?
I'm really excited to have you. I'm so glad that you're coming over, and I will be kind of get domestically hurt, I think, if I don't mention that straight after your panel, I think they're scheduled with a bit of a clash, but we're going to hold some spaces. We're having what we understand to be a world first event over in the tabletop area, which is all the published maps for Power Grid in simultaneous play, right through from the original Funkenschlag crayon rails game or crayon power game through to the new Power Grid Deluxe, both sides. You know, we hope that you'll maybe race back after your panel and join us for that.
Absolutely. Look, we've got so much gaming planned. Look, thank you again for joining us, and we're really looking forward to seeing you on the weekend.
Brilliant. I'll see you then.
That was Melissa Rogerson, the tabletop gaming manager for PAX. We are so excited to be there. And you heard it here first, the world record attempt, all the power grid maps in one space. That in itself is worth going.
Is that your cost of admission right there?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And also all these games direct from Essen, if they get here, fingers crossed.
I know, I'm really excited. There's a couple I want to get my hands on. Anyway, we're going to be back in a minute. We're going to talk about Kickstarter, but in the meantime, we are going to have some more music. That was some music by the Murlocs called Save Me Now. Save me from not playing any games, that's for sure. And before that, Hypnotized by a Mirror by J. Robert Youngtown. Another fine Tasmanian act here on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
We just got tweeted at.
I'm amazing. Someone's actually listening to the show.
We got twat at.
As we're going to air, Grail Games.
We got tweeted?
Just tweeted at us to tell us that they're releasing a new game on Kickstarter, which of course I'm about to talk about Kickstarter, called Too Many Cinderellas. Now, I feel like he's having a go at us. Is he saying we're princesses or what?
I don't think so.
Are you?
Are you?
I hope. Clarify.
Not. All right.
Anyway, it sounds interesting. But speaking of Kickstarter.
So, yeah, well, Grail Games gave us that 101.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Binary card game.
And before that, they had their 11sies for one, the game about morning tea.
Yep. So, Grail Games releasing Too Many Cinderellas in mid-2015 via Kickstarter. But now, here's Mark with an update on what's available on the crowdfunding website Kickstarter GameWise right now in his Kickstarter update.
That's right. Actually, there's not a lot happening this week on Kickstarter. It's actually surprisingly quiet. I don't know if it's sort of the pre-Christmas rush. There's one Australian game to speak of. I'll try and do it justice in my pronunciation. El Luchadore Fantastico Grande. It is the game of Mexican wrestling by Al Canes out of Melbourne.
Now, aren't there a couple of Mexican wrestling games
already?
Yeah,
that's
already
right. And it was been interesting because in our Essen update, we did talk about Luchadore Mexican Wrestling Dice, which got a re-release in Essen. Now, we have seen Luchadore, the Mexican Wrestling Dice game, in action.
G'day, Renee.
At BorderCon.
Yep.
It's very loud.
Very loud, Renee. Renee was the referee of the wrestling game, and hit us up on Facebook during the week to remind us that we promised we'd talk about that game, and we never have. There you go, Renee.
Well, we wanted to play, but just didn't get the chance at the time. So, Renee, we'll take you up on the offer very soon.
Anyway, El Luchadore Fantastico Grande looks quite interesting. It's only just started. It's 8% funded already with 27 days left to go. So it has just started. Now, there's not a lot of detail in the video. The video is one of those, hello, I'm me and this is my game. So, you know, the video perhaps leaves a bit to be desired in the selling, but the art looks great. Looks really professional. It's only $30. It's a card game of the Luchadore Mexican Wrestling. It looks really interesting, and it's just really about what is all that's happening in Australia on Kickstarter. But there are a few other non-Australian Kickstarters of note that I'm going to mention. But Trent, you look like you want to say something.
No, I guess it bothers me when, look, okay, yeah, Kickstarter is all about small companies or little home projects getting off the ground. So you maybe in that sense can't expect things to be that slick as far as your video presentations go. But it's a global marketplace,
and you really
need to step up with those production quality
standards. And you know, we have seen, even remember Viking Papercraft, from here in Hobart. You know, the production quality of their video was fantastic. And I think that sort of thing, you know, when people are on Kickstarter surfing around, they're not necessarily looking at, like we are, Australian games. They're just looking at games.
And if they see a really professional
video that really hooks you in, then, you know, you're likely to support it.
And you know what? If you can't make it look slick or high def, make it funny.
Yeah, and actually, that leads me to a point. Collapse, a deck-building game of Doomsday Preppers.
Ooh, all right.
Is a game on Kickstarter at the moment, out of the US. It's 400% funded.
Wow.
They were trying to raise $2,500. They've raised over $10,000.
This is about the people who like to have a bag full of weaponry and tin food by the door in case of the zombie apocalypse.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Basically, the premise of this game, so it's a deck-building game where you start out with certain cards in your deck and you add more cards to your deck to allow you to do extra things. The premise of this game, though, is you're going to stay and fight against whatever the end of the world is, and there's four different scenarios. I think there's a nuclear holocaust, there's a deadly pandemic disease, there's zombies, of course.
An invasion of My Little Pony characters.
Yeah, yeah, and I think at the other one's climate change. But the premise of this is you're just in your normal suburban home, and you've decided, well, we're going to last out the apocalypse in our normal suburban home. So quick, let's start collecting stuff to beef up our home, collect supplies, all that sort of stuff. So it's not like the Doomsday Preppers who really take it seriously. It's like Joe Blow in, you know, Joe Suburban decides he's going to live out the rest of his life in this apocalypse in his home. So it looks like quite fun. And the video for this is really funny. Okay. It's a husband and wife team who have put this game together. The game itself looks really great. I think it's actually in its last days. It might even finish today. It's already funded. But they really play with the video, actually.
I have to say, it sounds like that premise for the new Fantasy Flight role-playing game that I'm looking forward to about the end of the world as well. But
that very much light.
Although no one's really got a monopoly on that idea. My daughter came home from school today and said, "Dad, today I was playing Zombie Apocalypse versus Superheroes, and I was Portal Girl." Not a word of a lie. Please continue.
I will. So look, this is a light game, 20, 30 minutes. It looks like a lot of fun. So that's Collapse, a deck-building game of Doomsday Preppers. Now, another game taking Kickstarter by absolute storm, One Night Ultimate Werewolf Daybreak.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we had Bezier Games come out with One Night Ultimate Werewolf, which is basically condensing the game of Werewolf, the social deduction game, which usually goes over many nights and slowly people get eliminated until you work your way down to not many people left. One Night Ultimate Werewolf basically boiled that down to all happening in one night, one vote, you win or you lose.
And no player elimination.
That's right.
Yeah.
One Night Ultimate Werewolf Daybreak is designed as a standalone game in a similar vein, but also can be added to One Night Ultimate Werewolf to be like the second night. And it adds a whole bunch of different roles.
I looked at this, and from memory, it's a little X-y.
Is it?
I haven't got the price here. Look, they were trying to raise $10,000. They've raised $140,000.
I think this might be one of the ones where the postage to Australia is the killer.
Look, I didn't know that on it, but I'm going to talk about that in a second. Anyway, that one has just finished. The artwork is really good. There is another really good video. Oh, we're almost out of time. Space Movers, that's one I was going to talk about. It's like a cross between Firefly, Merchant of Venus, and a co-op game. It's $45 for the game. But if you want to get it to ship to Australia, it costs you $95.
What?
Which is absolutely ridiculous, because it looks an amazing game. And the only other one I want to mention, and I'm going to talk really fast, Speakeasy. It's a pub game, and it's social missions. So it's made on drink coasters, and the drink coaster says, you have to go and start a conversation with a stranger, or you have to go and compliment a stranger. And each drink coaster is a point, and if you do the thing you... get the coaster. Looks really fun and interesting. I don't think it's going to get up because it's not doing so well on Kickstarter, but it's check it out. It's called Speakeasy. We are almost out of time.
Hopefully a couple of things there to send you on to Kickstarter.com. We have been the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
PAX.
We'll see you at PAX 1 o'clock at the Drop Bear Theater on the Saturday. We're talking with Martin Wallace and Mark Morrison, a couple of one amazing and one very interesting, fascinating Australian designer there, about playing games and designing games in other people's universes. We'll see you there, and we'll catch you next week otherwise.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.